Part A. Directions. Each item in this part consists of a brief conversation involving two speakers. Following each conversation, a third voice will ask a question. You will hear the conversations and questions only once, and they will not be written out. When you have heard each conversation and question, read the four answer choices and select the one, A, B, C, or D, that best answers the question, based on what is directly stated or on what can be inferred. Then fill in the space on your answer sheet that matches the letter of the answer that you have selected. Now let's begin with the first conversation. Number one.
Excuse me, do you know which apartment Sally Hill lives in?
Sally Hill? As far as I know, she doesn't live in this apartment complex at all.
What does the man imply about Sally Hill? Number two.
Roger, may I use your phone? I think mine is out of order.
Feel free.
What does Roger tell the woman? Number three.
Were you able to solve that math problem?
To tell you the truth, I found it simply impossible.
What does the man say about the math problem? Number four.
Uh-oh. Your roommate's making dinner again. Your kitchen is going to look like a tornado hit it.
Maybe not. Last night he cooked dinner and left the kitchen spick and span.
What does the man say his roommate did? Number five.
How did you learn so much about trees?
Mostly from my father. He studied forestry in college.
How did the man learn about trees? Number six.
Hello.
Hi, Tom. This is Brenda. Since you couldn't come to class today, I just thought I'd call to tell you what Professor Barkley told us. He said we're going to have to write a research paper.
Really? And how long do we have to finish it?
What does Tom ask Brenda? Number seven.
Julie certainly seems to like classical music.
She doesn't like just any classical music.
What does the woman imply about Julie? Number eight.
How did you do on Professor Dixon's history test?
Probably not too well. I skipped a couple of questions and I didn't have time to go back to them.
What does the man say about the history test? Number nine.
I can't seem to get the lid off this glass jar.
Maybe you could heat it in some warm water.
What does the woman suggest? Number 10.
This desk must be an expensive antique.
It may look like that, but I got it for next to nothing.
What does the woman say about the desk? Number 11. Traffic downtown was terrible today.
You don't have to tell me.
What does the woman imply? Number 12.
I wish my classes were over so I could get out and enjoy the sunshine.
Nice out there, isn't it?
What does the man mean? Number 13.
Gary's using that old tape player of yours.
He's welcome to it.
What does the woman mean? Number 14.
I'm going to make a run for it. You don't happen to have an umbrella I can borrow, do you?
No, but here's a newspaper.
What does the man imply the woman should do with the newspaper?
Now read along with the directions for Part B in your textbook as they are read to you on the tape.
Part B, Directions. This part of the test consists of extended conversations between two speakers. Now let's begin Part B with the first conversation. Questions 1 to 4. Listen to the following conversation.
Walter, why haven't you been coming to Professor Crosley's anthropology class?
What do you mean? I've been there every morning.
Every morning? But, oh, I get it. You must be in the professor's morning class in cultural anthropology. I'm in her afternoon class in social anthropology. So tell me, how do you like our class?
Oh, it's very interesting. So far we've been studying the art, the architecture, and the tools of different cultures. And this Saturday, our class is going down to the local museum. They're having an exhibit of the artifacts of the early inhabitants of this area.
Your class has quite a different focus from mine. We're studying social relations in groups. For example, this week we've been talking about marriage customs and family life in a number of societies, including our own.
So what's your opinion of Professor Crosley?
Well, she asks her students to do a lot of work. We're going to have two tests and two research papers, but she's a fascinating lecturer. I've never taken an anthropology course before, but I'm glad I decided to take her course.
Yeah, same for me. In fact, I never thought of anthropology as an interesting subject, but now I sure do.
Number 1. What do the two speakers have in common? Number 2. When does the woman's class meet? Number 3. Which of the following topics would most likely be discussed in the man's class? Number 4. What had the man's opinion of anthropology been before this term? Questions 5 to 8. Listen to the following phone conversation.
Hello, this is WBCL Community Television Studios. How may I help you?
Hello. I'm calling because I saw an advertisement in the campus newspaper. It said there was a summer internship available for a student who wants to work on your local news program.
Right. But you do realize that all of our interns are volunteers. It's an unpaid position.
Oh, sure. I understand that. I just want to get some experience working for a television news program. You see, I'm thinking about a career in television news production after I get my degree.
Oh? Are you majoring in telecommunications?
No, in journalism. But I've taken some telecommunications courses.
I see. Well, you'll need to talk to Ms. Wagner. She's in charge of the internship program. But first, you'll need to come here to fill out an application form. Can you drop by the studio later today?
Number 5. Where does the woman work? Number 6. Why is the man applying for this position? Number 7. What is the man majoring in at the university? Number 8. What does the man need to do next in order to get the position?
This is the end of Part B. Go on to Part C.
Part C. Now let's begin Part C with the first talk. Questions 1 to 4. Listen to the following lecture. How many of you were at the football game Saturday night? Did you notice the blimp circling the stadium? Today's blimps are much smaller descendants of the giant airships, sometimes called zeppelins, that were used in the early 20th century. Like those zeppelins, blimps are lighter than air aircraft. But blimps differ from zeppelins in a number of ways. First, as I said, they are quite a bit smaller. The old airships were as long as football fields. And unlike zeppelins, blimps do not contain an internal metal frame. That's why blimps are sometimes called non-rigid airships. And blimps are a lot safer than the old zeppelins. That's because they use non-flammable helium in place of hydrogen to provide lift. As you may know, the age of the airship ended when the famous German airship Hindenburg exploded disastrously at Lakehurst, New Jersey, in 1937. I say that airship travel ended then, but some engineers believe that large, rigid airships will fly again. These airships of the future could be equipped with jet engines and filled with helium. Although they wouldn't be as fast as modern airplanes, they would be much more fuel efficient. Number 1. What is the main topic of this talk? Number 2. Which of the following aircraft is classified as non-rigid? Number 3. What important event in the history of airships took place at Lakehurst, New Jersey in 1937? Number 4. According to the talk, what advantage would the airships of the future have over jet airplanes? Questions 5 to 8. Listen to the following talk.
Twice a year, all the clocks in the United States are changed by 1 hour. In the spring, clocks are moved ahead 1 hour. This is called daylight saving time. In the fall, clocks are set back 1 hour to standard time. People remember how to change their clocks by remembering this saying, spring forward, fall back. It seems Benjamin Franklin was the first person to propose the idea of daylight saving time back in the 1790s. At the time, people thought he was joking. They couldn't believe he was serious. Many years later, during World War I, people realized what an innovative idea he'd had. In the spring and summer, the sun rises earlier. By moving the clock ahead, people can take advantage of the extra daylight and save energy. Energy is an important resource, of course, especially during wartime. The United States operated on daylight saving time during World War I and again during World War II. After that, some parts of the country observed daylight saving time and some didn't. Beginning and ending dates varied from place to place. This confusion ended in 1966, when the Congress passed the Uniform Time Act, standardizing the process and making daylight saving time a federal law. Since then, some lawmakers have proposed that the United States go to year-round daylight saving time.
Number 5. What is the main topic of this talk? Number 6. According to the speaker, when are clocks in the United States set back? Number 7. According to the speaker, how would most people probably have characterized Benjamin Franklin's plan for daylight saving time when it was first proposed? Number 8. According to the speaker, what was the effect of the Uniform Time Act of 1966?